welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 434. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today is not Emily Soden. She's taking a week off to finish a book or whatever, because apparently she writes novels and has another life other than exclusively talking to me. And I won't stand for it, boys and girls. So, despite her, I've gotten in a new man, the newest man in Pocket Gamer, proper full editor bloke, it's Rick Cowley.
Hello.
Your own fanfare. Love it. Hello, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. So, for the uninitiated, people who listen to the show probably do read Pocket Gamer, I guess, unless they hate all the horrible text and just come here for our sizzling chat. But chances are you might have noticed that Rick became editor. You were at PG Biz mostly, which is our business site, right?
Yep.
Which means that you're covering all of the what we call B2B in the business, which is just a fancy way of saying, like, oh, just talking about like boardrooms and ARPDAO and like
all the boring stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the games without the games themselves, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the bit people don't tell you about becoming mobile journo hack types. It's that like often your amount of playing games can suddenly go down a bit. Because you're too busy writing about them and talking to the people who make them, which is great, but it's, yeah, not quite necessarily what you think. So now you've come over from the business side and you are now head of the editorial. You're head of pg.co.uk.
Yep.
So how are you going to ruin it with all your business stuff, eh?
Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to basically just be PG Biz, but with under a different name.
So it's going to go orange.
It's going to, yep, going to go orange. We'll just, every day will be, if the word ARPDAO isn't in the headline, it's not getting through.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to be boring, no personality anymore, and everyone's going to love it.
I can't wait. I'm so gutted. I'm slightly divorced from this by being video man over on a different channel, and none of this really affects me much at all.
Oh, no, I'm coming for you next.
Oh, mate. Come on then, bring it. I've got a camera, I'm going to take you down. Cameras are heavy. They are superb projectile weapons. Let me tell you. So, we're not doing an interview in the traditional way we've been doing for the past few months, half a year now or something now. We've got more clocked up because we're just going to talk to you because you're a new person and we thought it'd be nice to find out who and what Rick is and what makes Rick tick.
It's nothing special, I assure you.
That's the name of the segment I've just come up with, what makes Rick tick. I'm not going to make a theme tune, that's just going to be it. So, Rick, being as people don't know who you are, what do you like, either in mobile gaming or the world of gaming in general? What got you into this in the first place?
I like games that do something weird, mostly. If it's got an interesting idea and it does something that I've not seen before, I tend to look at that and go, wow, okay, finally, not just another shooter kind of thing. I'm trying to think of examples now, but nothing's coming to mind.
I know what you mean. It's one of the things that people, I think the years of looking down your nose at mobile games is maybe coming a bit to an end. Because I understand the initial reaction to it, because people just looked at it and went, oh, it's like, what, Peggle? Yeah, whatever. And then carried on playing console games. But I think, especially now, the kids, the young kids, not us kids, will have come up with mobile phones as their first console.
Yeah.
Their first gaming thing. I think their view of gaming and mobile gaming will start to inform things that much more. And I think there's going to be less hostility towards it as a platform.
You'd hope so. But I figured that would have happened in the last couple of years. And, you know, I've been taking over the social channels this week, and there's still a lot of hostility towards mobile games, which I thought were pretty good. So,
What are they slagging off? Are they slagging off, like...
They're slagging off The Sims Mobile. I saw someone... There's been a few comments of people saying, oh, just buy a proper Sims game. It's like, well, it was never going to be a quote-unquote proper Sims game. It's a very unfair comparison. The thing with mobile, you've always got to think, it's not going to be a console game, it's not going to be a PC game or whatever.
No, it's a different format and therefore different rules apply.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's good, because when you do put a PC game onto a mobile device, it often sucks.
Exactly, yeah.
Because it's not made for it. And I will also point out that The Sims basically came up with the idea of the content pack back in 2003 or whatever it was. There's, you know, Steve Hogarty's review of The Sims 2.
Yes.
Yeah, that's resurfaced after like over a decade. But that's when they're charging you like a tenner for H&M clothes. And like, yeah, that was way, but that was years, 5-6 years before the iPhone even appeared. Mm. So blame The Sims for The Sims Social.
Blame The Sims for mobile games.
Although,
in general,
I never got The Sims. Like, for me, it just looks really tedious, Rick.
That's kind of the fun, though. It's just it's endless tedium.
But I've got that in my life.
And I think The Sims Mobile captures that perfectly as well.
But I could just wander around my flat, like moving my sofa a foot to the left and then buying an awful throw for it.
That's hard work. Where you surely you'd prefer to just click it and then it's a new sofa. Like,
yeah, but if
you could do that, you'd do it.
Yeah, but if I move my actual sofa is moved. And that might be some kind of net benefit for the feng shui of my room. Whereas if I just click my phone, then nothing's happened and I'm still sitting in my crap flat.
Well, I'm afraid that's just games in a nutshell, isn't it?
Oh.
Nothing happens and you're still just sat there in your flat.
Oh, no.
You should go outside more.
This has gotten a bit existential, I'm not sure.
Let's just abandon mobile games entirely and head outside and go enjoy nature.
But that's the point of mobile games, though. You can be out in nature, ignoring it on a bench, looking at another screen you brought with you. That's the glorious majesty of mobile gaming. Like, I'm out, fresh. Oh, no, look, wait, no, I've got a ping. Oh, there's some gems. Oh, brilliant. As the world passes you by.
Aren't games great?
This sounds a bit more negative than I was expecting. Is there stuff that you have as these are the games for me, like either on PC or my bubble? Like, what's a couple of your go-tos? You say you like stuff that you find a bit weird, or maybe it was the first time you encountered a certain mechanic or something like that. What's the stuff that you go to, your touchstones?
I think mostly for mobile games, weirdly, and I know this is probably bad and everyone's going to hate me, is idle games. Just games where you don't do anything.
Mate, you and Glenn.
And
is that part of the whole editorial procedure things? Like, you must like games.
They're not.
That play
right.
themselves.
Okay. Okay, right. Egg Inc. is one of the best games ever made. And that is a fact. And in that game, all you do is tap a button and a chicken comes out. And then you keep tapping that button until you have lots of chickens making lots of eggs. And you don't need more than that. It's just that is a game distilled down to its very basic requirements. You press a button, it does something, you improve. And that's why idle games are great, because it gets that whole experience and then shoves it into a tiny little 5 minutes ago kind of thing. And you don't need to waste much time on it, and you can just sort of go, oh, well, that's done, and then put it down. Or you can play it for 3 hours straight, lose your entire life to it. That's why I like them.
I do sympathise with that. I don't do clickers, and I've played a bunch of them, and I'm always a bit shrug on them because I find it a bit repetitive and dull. But you're right in so much as it's like the essence of gaming to some degree, which is you put in an input and then an output happens, and that either yes. creates pleasure for you or it doesn't, and that depends on whether you like it or not. There's this whole extra thing that sits alongside it, which is the skill aspect, and you know, either you improving at something or you learning the mechanics of something, and then that can increase the reward or kind of change the type of reward that you get from your input. And so a lot of people, I think a lot of the snobbery comes from that. People don't consider those any skill in a game, therefore the game is worthless, the game has yes. no value as entertainment, which is kind of not true. Like, I love skill games. And I love Bloodborne, and I love all that, but I really also enjoyed playing through Florence recently.
I still haven't played through it.
It'll take like half an hour, that's it, that's the whole game.
The problem is, I want to play it with my girlfriend, but every time I start saying, oh, let's play Florence, she's like, it's going to be really emotional, isn't it? And I'm like, yeah.
A bit.
Okay, we'll leave it till tomorrow.
Yeah, it is a bit, but it's only a very short thing, but that's not, there is no skill in Florence. It is an interactive story, but it's doing the thing that it does very well, and I got something from it, you know, I got something from that playing it. I didn't get better at doing like 20 hit combos, yeah. but I got something else from that, and that is a valid thing. And I think that's where people get a little bit, oh, it's not a proper game.
I was the same with we played Subsurface Circular this weekend, the Mike Biffle one, and we got that on Switch, and it's only about a half hour game, But we ended up spending about an hour playing it because there's like the big final choice after you've done the whole game, and then there's this whole thing at the end. And we just kind of put the game down, me and my girlfriend, and sat there for like half an hour discussing, well, what does it all mean? How does it fit into the world? Is what we're doing right? And that kind of thing.
Mm.
And that's what I really like in games, is when you get to a point in a game where you have to stop playing and think about what you've done. Like in like Spec Ops: The Line, and the ending of Assassin's Creed Brotherhood.
Really, that was your oh god, what do
that,
I do?
That was
moment.
My yeah, because it's the bit where it's like, oh, you now need to stab your coworker, and it's like, I don't want to, so I'm just going to put the game down and see if I can not do that. And I walked away for 10 minutes and came back, and it's still saying, oh, you have to stab your coworker. I was like, oh, well, fine then. I guess I'll do it.
Yeah,
but yeah, I like a game that makes me question what I'm doing.
There's a bit at the end of the 2008 Prince of Persia. I don't know if you played that one, the one that looks...
I know the ending, I've not played it.
Yeah,
yeah,
brightly coloured, where you play through the entire thing. Spoilers, by the way, for a decade-old game. But you play through the entire thing where you're basically bringing all the lands back to life. And then I think the angle is that you've got your partner there, or someone you're trying to resurrect. But in resurrecting her, you will reduce the world back to its starting state.
Yes.
And it was like, I don't want to do this. I'm about to undo the entire 20, 30 hours of gameplay I've just done. I don't want to. And I was like running around trying to find, like, there must be some alternative way I can do this and kind of create a win state whereby she lives and so does the world. But no. And it was the same thing with Life is Strange is the one that's got me most when it comes to decisions, where I put the pad down and sit there like thinking man style, like for about 20 minutes going, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, because I suddenly invested in these little ones and zeros and I actually care about what they think of me.
Mm.
It's very strange. But again, speaks to the power of the whole gaming thing, and where movies and books and all other kinds of fiction are interactive in the sense that you empathize. That's the idea. They're supposed to be little empathy machines where you put yourself in the place of a protagonist, or you, through description and through living through what they live through, you kind of feel what they feel. And that's what good films and good art and good literature does. Whereas video games do that thing where they have all of that, and you are actually directing the narrative. And so it kind of is actually happening to you.
Yeah.
And it takes it, for me, it bams it up that extra notch and some of that interactive fiction stuff. Whereas, again, Life is Strange, that's not a skill game.
No.
You're just choosing what to say. And same thing with the Telltale ones. But when they're done right, they really do leave you in moral quandaries.
Mm.
And that's fascinating because it stops and makes you think. Like you said, you stop and go, what would I do? What should I do? And I might even learn something about myself?
Yeah.
How did this happen? I know,
I don't
like
feeling and introspection. That's just weird.
It's like edutainment. This is horrible and creepy.
Ugh.
I don't like it. I can safely rely on you as a idle games man when I want to call out and say, you know, I know this guy. He likes games and plays himself. What a loser.
Great, thanks.
In my document of colleague slurs, I'm just going to like... I'll copy replace. I'll just sit there, find and replace every relationship to Glenn. I'll just now change to Rick. There you go. Good. All right, then. I'm glad we've got that cleared up. So let's go and do business as usual. We're going to do news. We're going to do new releases. There's lots of it. We've got stuff about Gameloft closing down studios, perhaps more studios. Not looking great for them. A huge Nintendo Direct happened last night. Our American colleagues are a little bit tired from covering it, but we've got all the information, including the arrival of a ton of games and Game Maker Studio 2, which could unleash a whole bunch more games over onto that platform. Plus, loads of new releases, including the likes of Chronoblade. We've got Reed, which appeared on iOS. Baldur's Gate, Siege of Dragonspear. Is it playable with human fingers? Probably not. And more besides. But first, it's the news. So if you watch the Apps by Channel, you'll have noticed that we put up a hands-on preview with Asphalt 9 Legends, it's called, which is the latest racer to come out of Gameloft, which, as we all know, has a storied history on mobile, covering games way back to the beginnings of the iPhone and that, back to the original modern combat, which was... I did at one point a comparison stream where I went back and played the original Modern Combat. And we've come along a long way. But they were always this studio, as we know, which kind of takes console releases and then does their own interpretation, is the generous word I will use to describe what they do. And that's what they were known for. Like, you know, if there's a console game, if there's a Halo, then they release Nova. And if there's Call of Duty, then they release Modern Warfare. And if there's a Burnout, they release Asphalt. And, you know, that's what they did. And they've gotten very successful doing it. However, news has come out that one of their studios, the Madrid studio that they have, is closing down, letting go 40 staff members, which is obviously bad news for any studio that has to close and people who have to lose jobs in this horrible economy we're in, which really sucks. And the month before, last month, they closed the New Orleans studio as well, another 40 staff with no jobs. And this is coming off the back of company closing down studios in New York, Seattle, Tokyo, New Zealand, and Valencia. So stuff's not going great over there at Gameloft by the look of things. Now, my theory on this, not being a super busy person, but my theory is this is a result of the transition from premium to free to play and them not maybe adjusting to the new models as well as they could.
Yeah. Well, an interesting thing is that last year they were the most downloaded company.
Really?
The whole year. They had the most downloads of their games. It was something, it was in the billions. It was at least a billion downloads of their games.
Wow, okay.
So it was beating out the really big games that make a lot of money. But obviously the problem is, none of their games made any money. They got a ton of downloads, but no one was willing to pay for them. So I think you might be onto something there. They still haven't quite got the hang of free-to-play.
Right.
Which is probably going to hurt them in the long run. But they have also now been bought out by Viacom? No, Vivendi.
Vivendi, that's right, the V one.
They're all the same. Mm-hmm. Massive conglomerate. So I imagine Vivendi is also sticking its nose in and looking around and going, oh, well, we can cut this back and we can cut this back and we can do this, this, and this. So it's one of the, yeah, it's kind of an issue of them having a big company behind them, and now they have to start reporting how much money they make each year. And so they're going to start looking at the bottom line and go, well, how many studios can we cut? How many people can we cut back on? And what games are we actually going to focus on?
Yeah, because you can see the chart starting to dip in 2017. And John Jordan, who used to run PG Biz, used to be on the podcast years and years and years ago, he's been looking at it as well, a wee article you can see on Biz. And they're talking about how, financially speaking, they generate loads of sales, apparently around 25%, from selling and embedding feature phone games, often for the like developing markets.
Mm.
And now that that market is crashing, which changes their financial situation and the way that they push out their games and generate profit. So, yes, periods of restructure and, unfortunately, lots of people getting laid off, which really sucks. We hate to see it.
It's a shame as well, because some of their recent games, like, I know there's been a lot of people, you as well, saying that Asphalt 9 doesn't look great because of the new control scheme. I actually think that game looks, like, really good. And I think that move as well is probably going to work well for them. If they market it right and people actually download it and they don't annoy too many of their current fan base.
Well, they've tried to please everyone there by adding the standard control system as well, which I didn't think was in it, and they don't let you near it till about 10 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
And when you're playing. So you can play it like a normal Asphalt game, and everyone went, oh God, thank Christ for that in the comments. But clearly what they are doing is like, hey, look, this is more of a casual system designed for mobile play, which is, again, the right way to think about games design. I've got a mobile phone and you don't want loads and loads of buttons all over the screen. How can we make it work for a touchscreen? And so they're sort of, I think, trying to please both camps. That might work, that might not. I'm always cautious when people try and appease everybody and you can't really. So you end up with this watered down thing that satisfies no one.
Yeah.
So you have to see how they do with that. And this comes off the back of the London Rovio studio closed down
a
week or so ago as well, which had a team in it generating. Because again, Rovio, they have fallen right off because Angry Birds being the amazing thing that it was in terms of a gigantic global franchise, but it always was a premium game. And they have tried again and again and again and again to come up with a free-to-play hit. They've tried every genre with those birds. And nothing's really come off. Nothing's really captured the same kind of heat like something like, you know, what Supercell was able to create with Clash of Clans. And, you know, they've rocketed ahead in terms of success versus Rovio, which is still a huge company and with all of its movie departments and everything else in its cartoon series. But compared to Supercell, it's small fry almost.
And the problem as well is with them, from what I remember of their financials last time I looked, is that they're, because now they've gone public as well, so they've got investors and stuff like that, so they need to worry about, again, the bottom line. So when they're closing, because the London studio was, it was an experimental RPG studio, if I remember, And obviously, they're finding more success in casual games. That's always been what they do.
Yeah.
So when you've got the bottom line and their share prices are falling and stuff like that, it was kind of, it was natural that it was probably going to get closed down. Obviously, a huge shame, because there were some great people working there, and it'd be really interesting to see what they would have come up with, and if they were allowed to release something, how that would have come out.
Yeah.
As a business move, it made sense. I mean, I keep thinking of my business brain, and that's not who I am anymore. I have to be consumer.
Oh, it's useful, though, because that's why we used to have one of the biz guys on, and it's a genuinely interesting perspective, because I am interested in the business side of it, and I keep somewhat abreast, but not to, like, minute granular detail, because obviously I am ultimately interested in playing the damn things. And the creative aspect of it. But people always ignore it, and people are very quick to damn developers and curse out games for trying to make some money. And, you know, the free-to-play angle, the in-app purchases, the, you know, bundles of stuff you can buy have rightly come under attack from lots of people saying that they're anti-consumer. But the flip side of that is the reason they're doing it is because, in many cases, they're not making money any other way, and it's either that or the studio folds.
Exactly.
And loads of people lose their jobs, and that's kind of sad. So it's trying to find this balance, because people want an amazing game that they can play that's great, that costs nothing, or that costs a very small amount. Mm. And especially with AAA games, when they're charging like 40 quid for a game, everyone's like, that's loads. And it's like, yeah, but games cost £40 20 years ago.
Mm.
And the price of that game 20 years ago will have cost a fraction of the $60 to $100 million budget that the game has now. So the numbers just don't balance out.
Yeah.
So you got to try and pull back that money somewhere. And that's where these games as experience things come. That's why you have your Destinies, and you have your, we want you to be playing this every day for 2 years and paying money gradually every few months to additional content and bonus packs. And that's how we keep this thing alive. That's how it works as a business model. And a lot of people don't like that. And I get it. And I don't like a lot of it, to be honest with you. Yeah. It makes me uneasy. But it's not as easy as just pointing a finger and going, big evil company. And it's like, yes, but also you don't want to pay for the thing that you're playing. So what do you want us to do?
Unless people start buying premium games, they're not going to make premium games.
And it's the same people.
It's as simple as that.
Who are on the App Store going like, $4.99. Oh, I'm not playing that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, $4.99? But there's a game with foot. So, and everyone always uses the example of a cup of coffee, but it's like, you probably had two coffees today. You could have bought a game that will last you 25 hours.
Yep.
And you're complaining about it, and then you're wondering why they're releasing free to play tat. Oh, so frustrating. But yeah, so sad news there. However, in more positive news, let's talk about Nintendo Switch announcements from last night's Direct that came out. We've got a big list of games which are all muscling their way onto what's becoming the darling of the handheld gaming scene. They just keep knocking it out of the park, it seems. No one's got a bad word to say about it. Now it's getting better, because we've got the likes of ports. We've got Okami HD coming over to Switch. That's nice. I liked Okami when it was on the PS2. Very nice.
I've never played Okami.
I mean, it's ever so pretty. It's very
had a copy. I've had a copy of it sat on my shelf for about 6 years now, and it took 3 years for me to take the cellophane wrapping off. How behind I am.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. We've got a No More Heroes game has appeared. Travis Strikes Again, which apparently looks like a collection of mini games, but it'll be mad because it's Suda51 and he's always weird to the point of annoying in my opinion at times. You've got the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy that's coming over there, which is, as we pointed out before, that's the first time Crash has ever, the original three games have ever appeared on anything other than a Sony console.
That's exciting. I've been playing that recently on PS4.
Oh, really?
And it's a very good version of it, actually. Yeah. Although I'm absolutely terrible at it, and I'm sure I wasn't this bad when I was a child. I've just forgotten all the moves, apparently. And
you don't have your, 12-year-old reflexes anymore.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, it came out a lot. I was a lot younger when it came out. Probably, 7 or 8-year-old reflexes. Yeah,
you disgust me. So, we've got Little Nightmares, which was that indie sort of 2.5D creepy platformer thing.
Have you seen the trailer, the little bit? Did you watch any of the Direct, or have you caught up on any of the videos?
I've been watching the videos, and I've seen a bunch of Little Nightmares.
Have you seen the Pac-Man Little Nightmares outfit?
No. Oh, hang on. Towards the end. Let's have a look. Oh, God, he's got a Pac-Man head instead of a hood. This is a nightmare.
It's the worst, most horrifying thing I've ever seen.
That's horrific.
But it's Pac-Man, so it should be nice, but it's the thing of nightmares.
Yeah, that's... Oof. Not sure about that. That's good. I do want to play this, because I am horror nerdy, but I haven't gotten around to it on the PS4. But that'll be a good one to see over there. We've got South Park, The Fractured Butthole is coming over, which is... I don't think that's done that well everywhere else, sales-wise. But RPGs do, as I understand, work pretty well on the Switch, because your ability to, you know, pick it up, put it down, hide it, whatever.
Yeah.
People seem to like it.
I don't care about South Park. It's not. It's never been of interest to me.
No, that's fair. And not anymore, especially.
I played a bit of The Stick of Truth, and I thought, yeah, it's a good game. But it's about it, isn't it?
Yes. But what comes alongside this, we've got a big story up on PG instantly, if you want to see all the games that got announced on Nintendo Direct. The interesting thing for me to come out of it was that Game Maker Studio 2 is going to be supported now. It's going to be available on Nintendo Switch, which means that if you make a game in Game Maker Studio, you'll have a Switch button, which you can push your game out and it'll be able to be played on Switch, which was one of the things that was unsupported when it first came out. People were like, ah, because, you know, all the main engines are supported on Switch, Unities and Unreals and whatnot. And now Game Maker Studio 2 is, which is big news for lots and lots of indies, who are the people who primarily use the engine, producing lots of 2D games. So we're talking about things like Hotline Miami, Spelunky, Nuclear Throne, Undertale's coming, that got announced. And that's great, because especially... I mean, that's what the Vita tried to do, which was try to be the mobile indie console. Sony tried to position themselves as like, hey, we're going to have all these cool indies, and we're going to support the indies, and it's going to be great. And they did, and it was good, but nobody bought it. Doing it on the Switch is even better, because people are buying the Switch, and people are liking the AAA games that are being made for it, your Breath of the Wilds and your, you know, Mario Odysseys and whatnot. So if they can also add the ability to play all these lovely indie games, 2D art, pixel art business, then I have to get one. I still have to get one.
If you've not got a Switch.
No, and it keeps getting better with every passing day.
That is... Yeah.
I'm getting married at the end of the month, Rick. I ain't got no money for playing games. No money for playing games for the next 2 years.
You should ask people who are buying you wedding gifts. You should say...
Put it on the list.
Yeah. That's a thing they have at weddings, I don't know.
Yes, that would go down a storm, I'm sure, with my soon-to-be wife.
What if we've got a toaster, we've got a new microwave, a Switch? Sorry, what?
This is essential to my future happiness.
It's for both of us. You can play two-player. It'll be great.
There's two controllers. They break off. Come on. It's going to be great. Yeah. So you can see the actual Switch videos that obviously Nintendo's put up, but go over onto PG and we've got the list of all the trailers of all the new games over there. So good news for you lot.
Can I just say one thing on the Switch, though?
Go on.
Smash Bros.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Finally happening.
When you come to the ability to do like four player on the same screen with your four little controllers,
yep,
then that's the game for that.
It's going to be a system seller, like guaranteed.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing, and I have nothing but excitement for it. And you probably get to play as Inklings from Splatoon. And I died and went to heaven when I saw that. I was just, I was screaming in my front room. Like all those horrendous Twitch reacts and YouTube reacts. I was that person for about 5 seconds. Until my girlfriend then kicked me in the shin and was just like, shut up, we have neighbours.
You did the honourable and right thing and you didn't film it and put it up on a YouTube
no,
channel.
No, of course. Well, who puts things on YouTube? That'd be ridiculous.
I know, right? Gross. Out and about this week, let us start with Chronoblade, which is another game called Chronoblade. Because there's already a game called Chronoblade on mobile that came out last year, I think. And this is different because there's no space between the words Chrono and Blade. 8 out of 10.
That was easy.
No, of course I am. I jest. So it's a side-scrolling brawler, basically. It's a punch-em-up Streets of Rage-style thingy, so you are just running, running, running. Each level is split up into a series of small zones, which have Wii force fields separating them. Kill all the baddies in that zone, and the force field will vanish. Get to the end, bit of a bosh, punch him in the face, level over. Then you go and take your coins and your stuff, and you unlock, because it's got the RPG element to it too, so it is going in and leveling up your character, leveling up all of your items, improving your headband, because it's that headband that stops all the big sword smashes. It really is.
Of course.
Don't underestimate the power of a bandana to deflect missiles. And then you just, you know, upgrade your skills. It's actually quite good fun, although it suffers from the same stuff that all these things do, which is you've got about 7 little tiny buttons in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen that you're trying to hit, and the special move buttons are a little bit too far over from your thumb, and it's all a little bit fiddly, but it looks nice. It's very slick. The combat's very kind of impactful. So it's one of those things where you hit and it feels like it hits, rather than that horrible weightless tear you get from some games. It's grindy as, in fact, but not in a too horrible way. Like, I played through quite a lot of it, a good like couple of hours of gameplay for the video, and did not hate doing it. It was quite fun. It is a free-to-play thing, of course. You can see the review up there and see if it might be worth your time. But Chronoblade, that's out right now, I think.
Does it have autoplay?
It actually does, Rick. There is an autoplay button that was initially grayed out, and then you unlock it. So yeah, excellent. If you want to, you can grind for XP by autoplaying.
That's what I like to hear.
You monster. Right, so go and play Chronoblade. Okay, what else have we got? You've played, is it The Sims? What's it called? Sims Mobile? Sims Experience? What is it?
Yeah, The Sims Mobile. It's right. The easiest way to describe it would be to say it's a bit like Kim Kardashian's Hollywood, which I've noticed is making kind of a resurgence at the minute. Not the game itself, but games of that ilk.
Right, okay.
Where you go to a location, you start an event, and you've got an energy meter, and you can do actions to then complete the event.
Right.
The interesting thing with The Sims Mobile, and I know it's a tiny twist and blah, 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 but in Kim Kardashian Hollywood, you start an event, if you don't do enough actions, you'd get a bad score and things go wrong and you don't get enough cash and blah, blah, blah. So you've got to pay attention or you've got to pay for energy and that kind of thing. And that's annoying. Yeah. In The Sims Mobile, you start the event and you will finish the event and get all the rewards no matter what. So you don't actually have to play it. When you do actions with your energy, it reduces the amount of time left on the event. So it speeds up the game, basically.
And
you can run off and do certain actions in the game to increase your energy as well.
So the interactivity is basically just speeding up the automatic process.
Yes. And that sounds boring.
It does, Rick.
It sounds boring, but it actually works really well for this kind of game. Because obviously it takes all the pressure off, and you know, like, I do a lot of my gaming in bed at the end of the day.
Mm.
And then so you can do a couple of small events while you're playing, get some extra bonuses, spend your cash on buying some household goods and that kind of thing. And then once you've done that, you can set yourself to go on an 8-hour event and then just go to bed. And then when you wake up in the morning, you'll have tons of rewards and you'll have moved really far on in a storyline or something like that.
Okay.
And you don't have to worry about it as much, which I think is really cool. You don't need to like set alarms to wake you up at certain times and then check in all the time. So I think it's really interesting in that way.
Does it have the actual building a house aspect of The Sims, or is this purely just, no, you're following a couple of characters?
No, you can build a house, and it's got customization.
Okay.
Like, it's got tons of customization, but obviously some of it's locked behind premium currencies and stuff like that, which isn't great, but it's, you know, it's to be expected, and premium currency is difficult to come by, but so that aspect I don't really like. But yeah, you can build new rooms onto your house, you can customize all your stuff like that. You can play as multiple Sims at each time, so you can have two Sims going at once, and then you can get multiple events going, so you can generate more cash, which I think is really interesting. And you can still make friends, you can still woohoo if that's your... If you just want to watch Sims get down, then you can still do that, but you do have to grind levels to get there first.
You have to grind before you can grind.
Indeed. You have to get to level 7 to buy a double bed, which I think... It's kind of dumb.
That's life, Rick. That's
that is how I experienced life, yeah.
That's
it wasn't
accurate.
Until I reached a certain point that I was allowed to buy a double bed.
No, you have to work for your double bed purchasing powers.
God almighty.
What a horrible reflection of reality.
But no, I think a lot of people are gonna look at it and go, oh, it's not real Sims. But it's that thing that I was mentioning earlier, of it distills the Sims experience down into a much smaller thing.
Yeah.
So you're still making friends, and you're still setting fire to yourself, and you're still accidentally drowning and stuff like that. But
classic.
obviously it is in a much smaller, you tap a button and then it gets done kind
of thing. Yeah. Less micromanagement.
Yeah, exactly. And for a mobile experience, that's kind of perfect.
Okay.
So I think as a mobile game, it's great. As a game in the grander scheme of things and blah, 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 is it really a game? Whatever. People aren't going to like it. But I think if you like mobile games, and obviously if you didn't, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast, you'll probably enjoy The Sims Mobile.
Okay.
That's all my right. review. I'm sticking by it.
I might look at it, but probably won't. I've been doing the other end of the spectrum, actually, because I've been playing all these hardcore pixel art platformers. So there's kind of two, and they sit in a very similar camp back to back. So I've been playing Temple of Spikes and Reed. And they are both lo-fi 2D pixel art hardcore platformers, where you play a tiny little character on a screen running sideways through an awful, awful maze of death. There are differences between the two. So the one I've played for the review that's already up is Temple of Spikes. And that one is, your character's ever so small. The idea is you walk through about, similar to what I was saying about Chrono Blade, where you're going through a level which is maybe divided up into 3-4 sections. And then each room, if you like, is kind of a series of obstacles. And in some cases, you've just got a little maze you need to navigate, jump around, catch coins. Your little explorer character can do a bit of a wall jump and move really fast. You know, it's got that Super Meat Boy twitchiness to it. Mm-hmm. And then the little twists that it throws into things are, you'll enter a room and suddenly the blocks, the floor, will start to separate. Each tile will start to float up and fly towards the ceiling. And of course, the ceiling is just a row of spikes. So you have to keep jumping off the blocks as they, you know, lift up beneath you to hit solid ground. And then that bit of ground starts going up. So you're constantly jumping, jumping, dodging, dodging, until everything's gone and you reach the bottom of this pit. And then you can get out and go through the door. And you think, nice. And then you hit a room and the same thing happens, only it happens sideways. So the boxes are flying at you from the side of the screen and then they start falling down on your head. So that's kind of the big twist that it has. But it does bring in lots of other elements like upgrades. You get the ability to reverse time, you get the ability to slow time, and you get the ability to blow up destructible blocks to make pathways through things. So there's more going on than just the jumping. I actually really liked it. It is challenging, of course, and it's going to annoy people who rage quit. And I think that's the same of this entire genre, but I think it's actually nicely done. I looked on Google and it's kind of based on a little mini game where it was just a single screen thing and all it was the blocks either rising or falling or whatever. And it's from like a year or two ago because I went looking and I always add the links to the games in the YouTube description. And I went, oh, I wonder if it's on Google Play. And it's like, it is, but it isn't. It's like almost like a prototype for the full thing. So don't be confused. This isn't that Temple of Spikes. This is the full thing. And it's good. I really liked it. And you can see the AppSpy review and the review on PG. Where Reed differs is you're a little cat, same idea, Twitch platformer, you got, this one is less about kind of spikes falling towards you, and it's much more contained and small. So the levels are far, far smaller, you are far zoomed in, far closer on the action, if you like. And this one's a bit more about moving platforms, more traditional almost. You know, there are platforms that move side to side over spikes. You have to jump on them and hit the right thing. You've got to collect a little glowing orb, which will then burst and open a doorway somewhere on the level. So there's two stages to each level, which is basically find the orb, that opens the gateway, then get to the gateway. And it's very, very cute. It's got an even faster restart than the other game, which is fantastic. So it's someone who's, I've died, I'm playing again, I've died, I'm playing again. And that's really good for me because the little burst of rage, internal rage I get, makes me go, gah, and I press immediately to restart. And so you're already back in the game before you have a chance to rage quit.
Ah, that is clever.
That, for me, that's what the games that restart so quickly, you know, those are the ones, those are the games that really win for me because the problem with Bloodborne when it was first launched, I don't know if you remember all the way back when it first came out, was that the loading screen was about 40 seconds long.
Ugh.
At the beginning, before they patched it, before they sorted it. And that, like Dark Souls, like all those games, when you die, it's like, oh, I've got to go back about half an hour. But you'd be sitting there staring at a black screen with the word Bloodborne written on it for 40 seconds. Mm. And that's a long time to be going, you know what? Screw this. I've got stuff to do. This game sucks and I hate everything. Whereas if you just jump straight back into the action, then you're like, you're bam, you're there, you're still angry and you're out for revenge. And that really keeps you dialed into it, I think. So this one's fun as well. The review's going to go up today, Reed. I think if you'd like one, you'd like the other. I liked them both, but I quite like these twitchy things when they're done right on mobile. That you know they're good because, especially with like Reed, there's a left, there's a right, there's a jump. Nice big buttons. That's
all you need. That's all you need.
That's all you need. And the moment you start flinging loads more on there, it starts to get problematic for me. But that works and it feels good. It's kind of fun. There is a bunch of other stuff, which, I mean, most of this I actually haven't played this week. So the Vault Papers is kind of, you know, those interactive games which message you and harass you.
Mm-hmm.
So like Lifeline, I'm thinking of, where like you're talking via SMS to someone and then your game gives you alerts like you're getting a text message. It's a bit like that. So you're helping out, you are a journalist and you're trying to, you know, sort out this whistleblowing case, helping somebody out. And you are receiving notifications and pop-ups in real time from things appearing saying, hey, look at this. And, oh, we've got this lead and that bit of research has come back. But it also apparently ties into actual apps. So you use things like Google Maps to help guide this journalist around the city.
Right.
So you're supposed to do kind of external research as well, which is really neat and why I'm totally playing it today. Because I love the sound of that thing. Well, probably, I mean, I'm sure there'll be a review of it up. I don't know if it'll be a video, but it's £2.99. That's out on iOS, but in beta over on Android. So you can maybe have a look at that. One thing I will mention is you didn't play the Baldur's Gate games at all, did you?
I have never played a Baldur's Gate, other than Dark Alliance, which was fantastic. I've never played a proper Baldur's Gate.
No. Okay. So these are the OG Forgotten Realms games, which were the isometric classic RPGs that you played back on a PC in the like early 90s. And they released Baldur's Gate 2 onto iPad, and it was an awkward fit, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I did do a video, and we did cover it, and it's like, it really felt like they had just taken the PC game and just dumped it on. And it's like, oh man, these tiny, tiny, tiny little icons, and my big fat finger. It just felt super awkward. But it was originally an expansion, right? So Siege of Dragonspear, it's called. It was originally an expansion for Baldur's Gate 2. And instead of adding it onto the original game, they've just released it as a standalone thing.
Right.
So you can get it now, and in a rare instance, it's out on Android first and coming to the App Store soon.
What?
I know, the world
whoever
inverted.
Thought of such a thing?
That's... Especially when it costs £10.99.
That is a lot of money.
On Android.
Yeah.
Where no one buys games.
Mm.
So that's interesting. I don't know what they're aiming for with that, whether they're like thinking of the, I don't know, the Nvidia Shield or something? I don't know.
Oh, possibly, yeah. That's not a bad shout.
Perhaps. But perhaps. Again, for the three people who have one of those proper Nvidia Shields, maybe it's for them, I don't know. But yeah, 30 hours of content. If you look at our video on Baldur's Gate, you'll see what it looks like. It will look like that. There's also a trailer up for it as well if you want to see further, but you can get it. Siege of Dragonspear out now for lots of money on Android. And finally, we've got Cotrio, which is described as a numerical puzzler. Now, I took a look at the videos for this, and I'm not videoing it because it's one of those things where it's a triangle of numbers, of nine numbers, and it's probably a really good game, but it doesn't make for fantastic video.
I actually think I remember playing this.
Oh, really? Is it one of the big indie pitch things? Or
yes, I think it was a big indie pitch in Poznan, in Poland, from what I remember, if it is the same game, which I'm almost certain it is incredibly difficult. Because I can't quite remember how it works, but you've got numbers and you've got to join them together, but they have to make a certain number when you join them.
That's right, yeah.
And then they reduce in number and you've got to keep doing that puzzle over and over again. Or something like that. And I just remember playing it and thinking, oh, this is really cool. Oh, I've done it wrong. Oh, okay, well, I guess I'll just start over. And then it kind of keeps drawing you back in, and it is so hard, but I think our review said it as well, it's very tranquil and relaxing. So even though you're losing constantly, it is quite nice. And I believe when I saw it, there was like a photo mode. Well, not really a photo mode, but just sort of a zen mode where you could just get rid of the puzzle entirely and then just look at the landscape.
The pretty backgrounds.
Yeah, you can just look at the backgrounds, and I think if you moved it around the accelerometer and the device would then like move it with you, and you can just sort of watch things go by in the background. And that was really interesting, because obviously the game is a puzzler, you're supposed to be there solving puzzles, but also you can just sort of, if it gets too much, you can take time out and not do puzzles.
Have a chill. Yeah, well, John Monday's a guy who reviewed it for us, and he really liked it, gave it an 8 out of 10, and said exactly that. It is as much about positional awareness as it is about the numbers. Yeah, he said it was strangely relaxing, really pleasant, and almost calming to play, even when you're getting cross at numbers.
Yep.
Which is a good trick. So that is out right now on iOS. I think it's just iOS. Yeah, just iOS at the moment. It's called Cotrio, C-O-T-R-I-O. If you want to give that a look, then go check it out. I think that'll do for this week. We've covered most of it. Come back and join us, Rick. It's good to have a new person on here.
It's been fun. I've had a grand old time.
Splendid.
I do love talking about both myself and video games, so...
Your two favourite subjects. Lovely. And what we'll do is, now you're here and part of the team, we'll try and get M and you on, and we'll make it a bit more of a party, because for a while now we've had myself and M and a guest coming in midway through, mainly because there's been no one else who's got a good enough mic and a good enough connection to be able to handle doing this. But you were clear and present, and you didn't sketch out for me or sound like a transformer at any point.
Wonderful.
So I think we're good. I think we're golden.
Finally, I'm part of the team.
Don't get too comfortable, mate. I've got my tower. I've got that camera, and it's well heavy. So, thank you all for listening this week. Do like, subscribe, and all the usual stuff I tell you to do. And come back next week for more. Perhaps with Rick, perhaps with them, perhaps with all of them. We'll see how it goes. And an interview. We'll have one lined up for you next week. So, until then, take it easy. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.